happy to welcome with us this morning students from Nathan Hale High School. Would they please stand? Thank you for coming. You may be seated. The students are here with us today with a national award-winning program called Court with Class. Students from high schools around the state are invited to join us for an oral argument. They are given the briefs of the case we are about to hear, and they do some activities around this case. And then they will be here to meet with a justice of this court to discuss the proceedings of the court, not the substance of the case we are about to hear. So we welcome the students. Let me introduce the court to you all. At my far left is Justice Lewis Butler. Justice Butler is the justice with whom you will meet at noon today. Seated next to Justice Butler is Justice David Prosser. To my immediate left is Justice Anne Walsh Bradley. I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice. To my right is Justice John Wilcox. To his right, Justice Patrick Crooks. And on the far right, Justice Patience Robinsack. With those introductions made, I will call our first case, which is 04AP2022-D, Office of Lawyer Regulation versus Michael G. Artery. Representing Mr. Artery is Edward F. Thompson. Mr. Thompson?
May it please the court. Good morning, Justices. My name is Ed Thompson of Clare Law Offices in Delavan, Wisconsin, and I represent Michael G. Artery. I believe that the real issue in this case is whether the 60-day license suspension sanction is warranted by the evidence. The question is, does such a severe sanction pass the Goldilocks test? Is the sanction too soft, too hard, or just right? Attorney Artery, has admitted all of the allegations against him, except for some of the allegations dealing with non-cooperation and the sanctions issue. Your job is not easy. I've served for about 9 years on a district investigative committee. I know that the suspension of a law license is a very serious consequence. And Attorney Artery knows that also. What is the appropriate sanction to be applied in this specific instance of misconduct? Attorney Artery and I believe that it is a public reprimand and not the suspension of a license to practice law. Attorney Artery is a sole practitioner in Delavan, Wisconsin, Walworth County, and he's been licensed as an attorney for over 33 years. We believe that the court must first determine the egregiousness or how egregious his misconduct was on a continuum of 1 to 10, 1 being de minimis and 10 equaling the maximum egregious ethical conduct. In determining that, I think we have to first acknowledge that Attorney Artery admitted that his failure to actively proceed with these criminal appeals given to him by the State Public Defender's Office was a failure to act with reasonable diligence in representing his clients. Attorney Artery has demonstrated remorse over this inaction. However, he does not believe that there was any actual harm to these criminal clients. This court has recently asked lawyers for quantifiable evidence not only of harm inflicted on the public when non-lawyers practice law, but also the nature and extent of that harm. Other than the frustration, which we realize is real frustration, by a lack of communication between Attorney Artery and his clients, there has been no evidence of any actual harm inflicted upon his clients. If there has to be quantifiable evidence of harm inflicted on the public when non-lawyers practice law, there should be a requirement of quantifiable evidence of harm inflicted on the public when lawyers practice law.
Well, what would the harm here be? That one of them would get a new trial or be released from prison, and the harm would be spending an extra 2 years in prison?
That is certainly a possibility, that could have been a harm. But in these particular cases, I believe they were all non-merit cases. except the one that he was successful in getting a hearing on, turned out that the trial court's ruling was upheld. So there was no actual harm. Now, the Office of Lawyer Regulation sanction memorandum has...
That would be true in an estate case where a lawyer continually, in many cases of the state probate, doesn't complete the estate, doesn't make distribution timely, but the estate is doing fine. The property is invested, so the beneficiaries are really not going to be hurt financially. You think that nothing should be done, or just a public reprimand there, too?
Well, we think that a public reprimand is appropriate in those types of cases as compared to the other types of cases of client trust accounts, dishonesty, lying, things of that nature.
Does the number of clients involved enter into your equation? Let me give by way an example, by an exaggeration. If there were 24 clients that had filed grievances for inattention to their legal matters, would you still be standing here and arguing for a public reprimand?
I think the number, Justice, of clients that file complaints does matter to a degree, but I think you also have to take into consideration the timing of those 33 complaints. Do they all happen in 1 year? As in this particular case, all within a short period of time in this gentleman's career, 33 years, never had any prior disciplinary actions whatsoever, no complaints whatsoever. But in this period of time, there's a batch or a set of them. So I do believe, I would have to agree with you, that the number does matter.
There seemed to be some communicative difficulties in this case. As I went through it, there was a pattern, or seemingly pattern, of non-responses, not only to the in the client situation, but also, and I know you take issue with this as far as the OLR, but it seems that if there were responses, they were quite delayed. It took you had to have a personal service when ordinarily there would be regular mail or certified mail, which was fine for, but then wasn't responded to. So I'd like to discuss that just for a moment. As far as, I know you're arguing or debating the non-cooperation.
Yes, Justice. Part of the non-cooperation, we are arguing against.
So there's, in some places he cooperated and some he didn't. But is it fair for someone to say, well, there was at least in some of these issues, on some of the, there was at least a non-response?
With an untimely response, yes.
Well, an unreasonable time was taken in several of these cases. And I believe that's what OLR is hanging their hat on, so to speak, as far as the non-cooperation.
I think in several of the cases that is their argument. And our argument is that in the other cases that we were timely or reasonably timely. And in the Rodriguez case specifically, we had been in touch with Office of Lawyer Regulation of Madison in writing even prior to the time that the official complaint
was issued. But what about the other cases? And what do you call timely?
Well, Your Honor, Mr. Arley indicated in his affidavit that he didn't receive two notices. So he believes that he was timely. Obviously, the Office of Lawyer Regulation is arguing we sent those notices. They didn't come back to us. Therefore, he received them. He has filed an affidavit saying he didn't receive them. I don't.
So is that the only argument you have as far as being timely? There were others too.
Well, I certainly, Your Honor, would agree that Mr. Artery did not respond to the Office of Lawyer Regulation in many of these matters in the time period set forth by the Office of Lawyer Regulation to respond. However, I can say to the Court, based upon what Mr. Artery has told me in his affidavit, that was not a willful act on his part and that he felt that he was cooperating. went to the District 1 committee and met with Frederick Zevers. I think his report is in the file. And again, I believe that he thought he was cooperating. The Office of Law Regulation Sanction Memorandum has an Exhibit Number 1 attached to it, involving what I believe is a similar circumstance, a similar case, where a public reprimand was determined to be the sanction warranted by that evidence. And that is what we're looking for in this particular case, is the same type of punishment, the same type of sanction. And that is in the public reprimand of Attorney Michael J. Period Masnia. Also, one of the cases cited by the Office of Lawyer Regulation was the case of the disciplinary proceedings against Albert Almanda. And this court suspended Attorney Almanda's license for 60 days for violations including dishonesty, diligence, and trust account violations. Attorney Audrey's conduct does not fall into those egregious categories. The same sanction should not be imposed upon Attorney Audrey.
Did you find any cases where 60 days was imposed when the conduct constituted delay and non-communication with the client?
Yes, I believe there were some cases that did impose that sentence, that sanction. I also would point out that you might take note that the referee's report and recommendation in this case was not issued in a timely fashion. Quote, because the pressure of other business has not allowed me to get to the report period, unquote. Well, this is the same reason Attorney Artery did not get all of his legal work performed in a timely fashion on these particular matters.
You know, had he communicated with the client and said, look, you're on my high priority list, but I just haven't gotten to you, and he sent that letter every 3 or 4 months or whatever, would we be here today?
I do not believe so, Your Honor.
That's right. So the fact that there's delay, and I don't want to speak for my colleagues, but also I'll speak for myself. I cannot say I have never procrastinated. I cannot say I've always done everything I wanted to do in a timely fashion. On the other hand, when there is delay, you advise somebody. And even if you don't do it yourself voluntarily, when that person writes you or calls you or communicates with you, then you respond, even if it's a fib that I'm working on it. I mean, isn't that the problem here?
It is, and I have advised Attorney Audrey of that fact, that you must respond to these inquiries. And I understand in the private practice of law, especially a sole practitioner as he is, in this particular case, his secretary quit on him during this period of time, or in between this period of time. I understand that there are telephone messages on my desk. There are things that should be done today. And yet, here I am this morning, so those things aren't getting done. I have the best of intentions, as I think Mr. Audrey did, of getting them done later this week. Sometimes they don't get done, but I would agree that when a client contacts you, you need to get in touch with that client and either say, I'm not doing it, or it's next, or...
Well, you've got to hire somebody else. I can't get to it.
And one of the things that has happened in this case is Mr. Artery is no longer taking cases from the State Public Defender's Office on appeals. He realizes that he had 110 cases. As a sole practitioner with no office staff, you cannot handle 110 cases. Sometimes, I believe as lawyers, we don't know the word no.
Did the public defender's office ever stop giving him cases with these complaints, or is this sort of standard operating procedure?
No, I believe that there was a mutual agreement with the State Public Defender's Office and Mr. Artery that there would be no further referrals as a result of these 8 complaints. I believe that this court needs, of course, to look at the standards for lawyer discipline under the ABA, and you should be reviewing the aggravating and the mitigating factors. And one of the first aggravating factors, of course, is prior disciplinary offenses. There are no prior disciplinary offenses in Mr. Artery's 33 years of practice of law until this current set of grievances, all occurring approximately the same time in his life. So there's no aggravation there. It's to the contrary. He had no complaints against him. The second item for aggravating factors includes dishonest or selfish motive. The Office of Lawyer Regulation and the referee have stated that there was no dishonest or selfish motive on the part of Attorney Artery. I think that's important to consider. The pattern of conduct. Justice Wilcox asked about the pattern of conduct. I would state that there's been no pattern of misconduct for lack of diligence until this current set of grievances. And then I have to admit to you that there was, within this set of clients, a pattern, but not a long-term pattern. Multiple offenses. Yes, in this particular case, there are multiple offenses occurring during the same period of time. Bad faith obstruction to the disciplinary proceeding by intentionally failing to comply with the rules. Mr. Arden has stated that there was no bad faith obstruction to the disciplinary proceeding, but he acknowledges that at times he was slow to timely respond, but he believes that he has fully responded. Next item for consideration is the submission of false evidence, false statements, or other deceptive practices during the disciplinary proceeding. Attorney Artery has admitted most of the allegations, and there have been no allegation of false statements or false evidence presented by him. Refusal to acknowledge wrongful conduct. Attorney Artery was quick to acknowledge the wrongful nature of his conduct, knew he had taken on too many cases, and didn't handle them. The vulnerability of the victims. We believe that Attorney Artery's clients were not vulnerable victims. They were criminals who had been convicted and sentenced to prison, and they were mostly no-merit cases where nothing was going to change in the end. Substantial experience in the practice of law. Yes, Mr. Artery, at the time of these offenses, did have 31 years of experience in the private practice of law as a solo practitioner. Indifference in making restitution, the next item. Attorney Artery acknowledges that he is responsible for the entire cost of this proceeding. Now, the mitigating factors that we ask this court to consider, and the ABS, ABA asks this court to consider. First one is absence of a prior disciplinary record. We have that in this case, the most important mitigating factor. As far as I know, there's no prior disciplinary record. Second mitigating factor, absence of dishonest or selfish motive. Everyone, I believe, has acknowledged that there is an absence of any dishonesty or selfish motive on the part of Attorney Artery. Personal problems or emotional problems. The District 1 committee indicates that Mr. Artery had some health problems and that his secretary quit on him at the time when the disciplinary misconduct occurred. Next item for mitigation, full and free disclosure to disciplinary board or cooperative attitude to proceedings. I believe that Attorney Artery has admitted most of the violations as they were alleged, and I believe there's no indication from the District 1 committee that he had anything less than a cooperative attitude.
Mr. Thompson,
yes, Your Honor.
Did the referee consider these aggravating factors and these mitigating factors that you're setting forth on the record?
I believe that the report contains some of those, yes.
But you're taking issue with his conclusion.
I am.
As I understand, his conclusion was to recommend the 60-day suspension.
That's correct.
Thank you.
The next item for mitigating factors is inexperience in the practice of law. We don't have that here. Next is character or reputation. I don't believe that's applicable here. Next is physical or mental disability of impairment. Again, Attorney Artery has some physical and health problems, but he's not raising those as a defense to these allegations. Remorse, I think Attorney Artery, who represented himself up until last week, has admitted most of the violations against him, and he is remorseful, and he's taken action to correct it. And then the other item is remoteness of prior offenses. Again, I don't believe there were any prior expenses. It is our contention to this court that a public reprimand will get Attorney Artery's attention. In small Walworth County, Wisconsin, it will be, your decision will be published in many of our local newspapers. Other attorneys will be deterred when they read about this public reprimand. Your decision, of course, will be published in the case reports and in the Wisconsin Lawyer magazine. Your ruling will declare that Attorney Artery's conduct, his lack of diligence, his lack of timely responding to some of the requests of the Office of Lawyer Regulation, are improper and were improper. But the public reprimand will not limit an attorney's right to practice law. We don't believe that after 33 years, for the first complaints, even though there are multiple complaints or numerous complaints, all occurring within the same period of time, that the first penalty that should be imposed is the suspension of the right to practice law. We reiterate that unlike some of the other cases, this does not involve dishonesty, does not involve false statements, does not involve client trust account monies or stealing things that we all abhor. We abhor lack of diligence as lawyers, too. But we believe that in this particular circumstance, a public reprimand is the appropriate sanction.
Counsel, you indicate lateness of response to OLR, but it appears to me that there are several instances of non-response, no reply at all.
There were some letters that were sent, that two letters that were sent that Mr. Audrey said he didn't get.
Yes, but beyond that.
Certainly he didn't respond to those. He did receive other letters. I think he felt that he had been in contact with the Office of Lawyer Regulation about those matters, but not within the time period that was said in the OLR letters. But again, he does not believe that that was willful, that he wasn't trying to thwart the disciplinary process.
I mean, I think of the Balthazar allegation in the complaint. There was a letter that was sent in mid-July asking for additional information, if I recall. No response. They followed up early August. No response. So, and that's true in other cases, too.
I think he has admitted that he was not responsive to all of the OLR requests.
Okay.
Are there any other questions from the justices?
Thank you, Mr. Thompson.
Thank
you
very much.
5 minutes in rebuttal. Robert G. Crone, representing the Office of Lawyer Regulation.
May it please the Court, I'm Robert Crone, retained counsel on behalf of the Office of Lawyer Regulation. As is probably inevitable in these cases where there are stipulations to the underlying circumstances, we tend to dwell on certain aspects of the case and perhaps lose sight of what we think to be the major violations and the most significant violations here that were stipulated to. And consideration of these violations, of course, are important in terms of the overall sanction recommendation and finding. There has been poor or no communication here with several clients. There has been lack of diligence with several clients, all in the criminal appellate context. This is all admitted, and this shows a real pattern of substandard practice. And these violations alone, I think, would warrant a consideration of a 60-day suspension.
Counselor, are you in agreement that all of these violations occurred within a discrete time period of approximately 1 year?
That's correct.
Thank you.
In terms of the non-cooperation, there was non-cooperation which was admitted to in two of the three cases. The Balthazar matter is one that presented a situation where there's months of non-cooperation with OLR in terms of letters. And the Diaz case is another case where there was months of cooperation and non-response to letters.
What now, time period was that in? Same time period as non-responding to the clients?
The same general time period in both of them. Refreshing my recollection by looking at the complaint, the Balthazar matter was in July of 2003, and the other matter, Diaz, was in August and September of 2002, about a year earlier. Now, in these matters where these non-cooperation allegations were basically admitted, there's some reference in the brief by Mr. Artery to other letters that he did send, that either before or after the letters in question to which he did not cooperate, which are not particularly relevant. And the only other case dealing with non-cooperation was a Rodriguez matter, and in that case, affidavits were submitted, and the referee made a determination that is not clearly erroneous, that a letter was sent to Mr. Artery, and a second letter was sent, the second by certified mail, and he simply chose not to accept it. And under the Bach decision, the Artery could not claim the lack of notice when he did not pick up a letter that was sent by certified mail. So there's a clear record here by stipulation and by findings of the referee in five separate client matters involving seven separate rule violations and roughly 12 counts. And the question is how serious are these matters in terms of sanction and whether a public or 60-day suspension is appropriate. The non-cooperation decision of this referee is in keeping with this Court's non-cooperation decisions recently in the Kostich case, the Morrissey case, and the Kospowitz case. Now, in terms of this case, when you look at public reprimand cases and sanction cases of suspension, 60-day suspension, for the most part, if I can generalize a bit, it seems to me that this Court looks at the number of clients involved, the number of violations, and the severity of the rule violations. In this instance, I beg to differ with counsel as to whether there was no harm here. Now, first of all, these are vulnerable people who have expectations in terms of their criminal rights, their rights under the criminal law system. And I don't think that the rules of professional conduct should be interpreted any differently because these people are convicted criminals. It seems to me they're entitled to good representation like anybody else when they have a public defender. And in Mr. Townsend's case, he went 18 months without getting any kind of response from his attorney. Mr. Rodriguez's case was 4 months. There was, in the Diaz case, about a one-year delay in terms of his efforts on the appellate level. And in the Smith case, Mr. Smith was virtually abandoned. Mr. Artery gets a transcript but does not file a notice of appeal. Now, so these people, I think it somewhat begs the question to say, well, had he acted further or had he done things more timely, nothing would have been any different in terms of their cases. We don't know that. And the other thing is, what about the system, of the justice system? When you have these kinds of appeals and these kinds of delays and inaction at the appellate level, it seems to me the court system is affected by this as well. Now, the case law that this court has determined where 60-day or greater suspension times have been found deal with some cases that are rather similar. The Bear case, cited in our brief, involved a 90-day suspension. That involved post-conviction proceedings and neglect and failure to cooperate. The Cotton case involved a six...
Counsel, so in that case, was it only one violation? Were there several? What was...
In Bear?
In your compendium, I just wanted to get an idea of the range.
I believe there were more than one. I can find that briefly.
Well, you.
I'm sorry. I stand corrected. At least my recitation of it. I don't have the case in front of me. It refers to a client in our brief and ineffective assistance of counsel and delays for over a time period of 5 months and then non-cooperation. Court adopted a referee's determination of a 90-day suspension in that case. So I believe one, but I'd have to go back to the text.
Well, opposing counsel was trying to, when he looked at the compendium, and he's telling us that because of the public derision when you have a public reprimand, the publication, the fact that he's had to hire counsel, the costs, what I'm interested in is on our scale of how we've handled these, you talk about pattern of conduct, and there are several cases, I mean six or seven or eight cases here, and it's over a discrete period of time. I'm just wondering whether 60 days is on the strict end of discipline or is kind of middle of the road.
Well, I think it's the middle of the road if you look at the Bear case, which was 90 days, the Cotton case, which was 6 months, the Glickman case, which involved five counts, two clients, that was 60 days, The Morrissey case was two clients, lack of diligence, non-cooperation. That was 60 days. Now, there was the Costage case. That was a public reprimand, but that was a single count. And the Kospowich case was a public reprimand, but that involved some mental health issues on behalf of the respondent. So I think that the 60-day suspension is the minimum suspension, and I think it falls well within the realm of what this court has done in non-cooperation cases. I mean, I don't think it's tipped one way or the other as on the extremes. Now, I do have been asked by Oral Archer to read this statement as well. Mr. Artery's brief makes a statement on page 7 of his brief to the effect as follows, that he is not only, and I'm quoting, not only has respondent never been disciplined, he has not had one single complaint filed against him until recently. This raises an issue that is and should be irrelevant to the court's decision in this case. OLR asked the court not to rely on Mr. Artery's statement in deciding this case. Also, it is correct that respondent has never been disciplined. It is correct that respondent has not previously been the subject of a formal, publicly filed OLR disciplinary complaint, and OLR cannot confirm or deny an attorney's grievance history information without this court's express authorization under SCR 22.40, paren 2, paren. So we're asking the court to disregard that statement. For those reasons.
What about the alternative? What if this court were interested in knowing about that?
And I guess if the court is interested in knowing that, the court can order us to give you that information, and we will do that. Now, in this case, I think that it's important to remember that Mr. Artery's duty is not only to his clients, but it's to the public as well, and it is to the Office of Lawyer Regulation. The non-cooperation as we have here is not an act of negligence. When counsel says, well, this wasn't willful, that's difficult to accept. When a person sends you a letter, a regulatory agency of the very profession you're involved in saying respond within a time certain and you ignore it, and then they send you another letter and you ignore it, and you get to the point where your license is threatened to be suspended just by reason of not responding, to me, that's willful. I can't imagine anything being more willful. The duty is to the public, the duty is to the client, and the duty is to the Office of Lawyer Regulation. I'm advised that this kind of non-cooperation presents some significant administrative headaches to OLR to have to send this out, to keep repeating and reminding, to bring motions to suspend, that sort of thing.
Counsel, I'm going to assume that there is no or not significant history of discipline in this case.
Okay.
And then I say 33 years of no formal complaint being filed, okay? And all of a sudden, for 1 year, things go crazy. So immediately what comes to my mind is, depression, alcohol, mental illness. That's something that's been my experience as a trial judge when you have some kind of what appear to be aberrant behavior.
Please don't assume that here, because there's nothing in this record that supports that suggestion. There's just nothing. Counsel's suggestion that health problems, there's nothing. No defense was raised. No evidence was presented. The referee made no such finding. So that's not a part of this record at all. But I understand your position and how you think that might necessarily follow, and maybe so, but it's not a part of this record.
Mr. Crone, I'm not sure this is relevant, but I'm curious. You mentioned the 100, or maybe it was Mr. Thompson that mentioned the 110 cases that were pending with Mr. Artery. Do you know if those cases were appointed on a case-by-case basis, or does the record reflect whether the cases were appointed on a case-by-case basis or whether they were appointed pursuant to a public defender contract?
I don't know that.
All right.
I do not know that. Sorry. As far as the timing of these particular complaints, glancing back over the complaint, which was by and large admitted, it would appear that this conduct occurred in a time frame of 2001 extending into 2002 and even into 2003 in terms of the non-cooperation aspects of it. So I'm not so sure, because the complaint was admitted, I could go through this item by item, but I'm not so sure this is all limited to a one-year time. I think it stretches beyond that to some extent.
I just did it. I did a check, and it's about 2 years.
And that, some of that is related to the non-cooperation features of it as opposed to the substantive violations. But in closing, there are 12 violations of 7 rules involving 5 clients. The findings of the referee heard the evidence, considered all of the case law, considered the fact that there were a number of people affected here and there was a pattern, and found that a 60-day suspension was appropriate. I frankly, given this court's own disciplinary cases dealing with similar cases, I don't think that's out of the realm of reasonableness, and I don't think the referee's decision should be disturbed in terms of
that. How much did OLR ask for? What was its recommendation?
60-day suspension.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Crone. Mr. Thompson.
Thank you very much for giving me this opportunity. Last time I was in this building was 1978 when I was sworn in, and I very much appreciate this opportunity to speak to you. The first question from Justice Butler I'd like to answer, it was from the report of the grievance investigation dated February 3rd, 2004, that Mr. Frederick Zevers, the chairperson investigator, indicated that Mr. Arty said his caseload was approximately 110 cases. So that's where that came from. I believe that from Mr. Artery's brief that most of those were up under the appellate contract for criminal appeals. And I think the Office of Lawyer Regulation is trying to get you really to ignore the number of contacts that my client had with the Office of Lawyer Regulation when they say that this cooperation was from 2001, 2002, and 2003. You know, there's a letter in the file of October 18th, 2002 that deals with the Rodriguez matter. October 18th, 2002, it's 3 pages long for my client in response to the OLR's questions. Where was the non-cooperation in that matter in 2002? He was cooperating. And then in the Balsar case, look at the evidence there. My client wrote a letter on February 27th of 2003. OLR sent him a letter then on March 25th of 2003. Mr. Ardley sent a letter back on March 27th, 2003. OLR sent another letter. My client's responding all the time. They sent another letter. We need more information. That was on March 31st of 2003. Mr. Ardley sent a letter back to OLR on April 10th of 2003. OLR sent another letter June 9th, 2003. July 7th, Attorney Artery sent a response to that letter to OLR. OLR sent another letter on July 15th of 2003. Took Mr. Artery till October 2nd, 2003 to write a response to that particular matter. I don't believe that we have what's the picture that's trying to be painted is the total lack of cooperation with OLR or a willful lack of cooperation, and that has not occurred in this particular case, and the evidence is really clear that that has not occurred in this particular case. Every case has to be decided differently. We all know that. And in this particular case, because of the 33 years of practice, because the pattern that the referee is talking about, he's wrong in that pattern, because of this evidence that Michael Artery was responding to OLR, not in a timely fashion, but he was responding, that there is a pattern by Mr. Artery is just incorrect. It's wrong. Unless you want to say this pattern is just about these few cases that are here before you today. You have nothing 31 years before, and I think that's important to consider. I think it's important to consider that we have a matter here where it is a lack of diligence and a lack to timely respond, but not a willful timely to respond. And the public reprimand will do the sanction necessary, not only for Mr. Artery, but for the rest of us as attorneys, too. A license suspension will be a very heavy penalty upon Attorney Artery. And is not appropriate in this particular case. There are a lot worse practices, unfortunately, within our profession, and those are the ones, I believe, that should suffer the lengthier discipline. Again, I truly enjoy the opportunity to speak to you. Are there any other questions?
I'm a little bit curious about the communications from OLR in the Angel or Angel Rodriguez matter. There are quite a number of cases here. There were multiple different communications from OLR, and there isn't really any dispute that those communications were received. Why is this case different? What basis there is there for believing that the first letter didn't come and that he just didn't act on the second letter?
That's a very good question. Thank you. The reason for that is, number one, is Mr. Artery has sworn under affidavit that he didn't receive those two letters. That's number one. And number two is, if he's responding to the other inquiries in the other matters, again, I understand not in a timely fashion, but he's responding in the Baltazar case and in the Diaz case to OLR. Why didn't he respond in the Rodriguez case, Justice Prosser, if he had received those letters? So I think there is a reason to believe that he didn't receive those first two letters.
Well, but one is a certified letter.
Justice, my time is up. Do you want me to continue?
Yes.
All right. Thank you. Yes, and he acknowledged receipt of that certified letter. And he should have responded immediately. We teach the lawyers in our office that if you get something from Office of Lawyer Regulation, if you have to, drive to Madison. That's the way, if you have to. You get on that right away. You come into us and say, I've got this from Office of Lawyer Regulation. Everything else stops in most law offices. Mr. Arley practices on his own, sole practitioner, apparently does his own typing. Didn't do what should have been done in responding to OLR. And he admits that.
Well, isn't it more likely that he received the letter and misplaced it than that he didn't receive it at all? I mean, it just strikes me the letter didn't come back. Yeah, I mean, OLR obviously had his address.
Your Honor, if you pardon me, I no longer personally trust the United States Postal Service to get every document. I send letters sometimes, and people say they don't get them. If you ask me, is it more likely? I guess it's more likely that the post office delivered it from Madison to Delavan, and he received it. Yes, but he denies that, sir.
Chief
Justice Bradley, if I recall, the referee found that your client's testimony was not credible with regard to the denial of receipt of those letters. What's our standard of review if the referee says it's not credible? If you know, and if you don't know, that's fine. Is it clearly erroneous?
I think, is it clearly erroneous is the standard, yes.
Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Thompson, and thank you, Mr. Crone, for your discussion of 04AP 2022D, Office of Lawyer Regulation versus Michael G. Artery. That closes the hearing on this case. The court will take a few moments in recess so that the students may leave and other students may enter before we hear the second case. We are in recess.